John, while I was off, the Dodgers certainly weren't. They were busy. They traded for Tyler Glasnow. They signed Shohei Ohtani, and they signed Yoshinobu Yamamoto. In the signings alone, it's over $1 billion. I guess we're going to talk about that.
Yes, Yamamoto was the icing on the cake. A big offseason. This is the winter of the Dodgers. Certainly a big disappointment for both the Mets and the Yankees, but I think it's good for baseball to have that super team.
Well, they're certainly a super team. We'll talk about all the teams of 2023. This is our final episode of the year, so we're going to do awards, most disappointing, best story of the year, more than that, if you stick with us on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman. John, this holiday season, I only have one question. How much did you miss me?
We did. We did. Joe Beningo replaced you. A very different show, but
Different
have you
Joe.
back?
Different
He's
Joe,
great.
different show, right?
Yeah, he was great, but we're happy to have you back.
Hey, while I was gone, some stuff went down. I don't take vacation very often because there's always stuff going down. I tried to ignore it this time. It's hard to ignore when a player who's never lifted his arm in a Major League Baseball game gets $325 million, which is what the Dodgers paid Yoshinobu Yamamoto, 12 years, 325. As we know, John, you did so much excellent reporting leading up to it. The Mets and Yankees were deep into this. The Mets offered the same amount. The Yankees were at $300 million. He decided to join Ohtani, who got $700 million, most of it deferred for a long time from now with the Dodgers. Why do you think he's in Los Angeles on that coast instead of New York on this coast with us?
Yeah, as we look back on it, I think he wanted to be a Dodger all along. I mean, I'd heard a couple months ago that he wanted to be on the West Coast. Of course, the handlers have to say that he's going to consider everything, which is what they always do. But as was the case a year ago when we saw Trey Turner go to the East Coast, which we anticipated, his family from the East Coast, Aaron Judge go back to the Yankees, and other players want to be on the East Coast. This year, it's been kind of a West Coast year, and I did hear that a couple months ago. Of course, obviously his agent's not going to say that when you've got the Yankees, the Mets, the Toronto, you've got Philly, Boston. Everybody is involved with Yamamoto at some point. Again, eventually, Philly, Boston. We're still hanging in there with the Yankees and the Mets. And obviously, the Yankees and the Mets wanted him bad. And, I'm sure it was disappointing, but, I think the Yankees felt they had a good chance. They loved their meetings with him. He seemed to know a lot about Yankee history and be into it. But, it's all part of the negotiation. And I don't blame him. I don't blame his handlers or anything. But nothing was said at that press conference that makes me, not think that he did want to be on the West Coast all along and want to be with the Dodgers, which I get. I mean, it's a great city. They're the most consistent big winner over the last 10 years. It was interesting. I saw over the last 25 years, the Yankees are 700 games over 500. The Dodgers are second best at 500 games over 500. But over the last 8 or 10 years, the Dodgers have been a bigger winner than even the Yankees.
Yeah, the Dodgers made the playoffs 11 straight years, won the NL West title 10 times. So the time they didn't, the Giants had to win 107 games to keep them from winning it. Look, he certainly tipped his hand at his press conference yesterday when he was asked about the influence of did he sign because Ohtani was there and influenced them. He said he probably would have signed with the Dodgers even if Ohtani didn't sign. So to your point, he kind of tipped his hand where he wanted to go. And I wonder what the Dodgers are now going to be Goliath in this sport. I wonder what it means for them going forward. Does this open a pipeline where more Japanese players want to play, do more for the Dodgers? Do Japanese players want to, it used to be you'd hear all the time, Japanese players didn't want to play where there were other Japanese players. They wanted to trailblaze their own area. Clearly, now you have $1 billion spent on two Japanese players here. So when Murakami, the third baseman, comes, or the young pitcher comes in the next couple of years, who's supposed to be so great, will it be the
Yeah, rookie.
Dodgers?
Yeah.
Yep. Let's keep that for the future. They're a super team. There's a lot of calls. This always happens, John. This has been happening for 30, 40 years, 50 years. Hey, we salary cap, can't have it. Everyone forgets what happens to the Padres, Mets, and Yankees last year. The Dodgers still, to me, need starting pitching, even after doing this. And yet they're a super team. Good for the sport, bad for the sport.
Yeah, I think it's good for the sport. I said that when Ohtani signed with the Dodgers to have a super team, it's good for the sport. People in Toronto, of course, I said it had a small market feel. They weren't too happy with that. That was probably the main reason they were unhappy. But I still stand by it's good for the sport to have a super team. And there's no guarantee that they're going to be a dynasty. I mean, look, I'm not going to say it's a crapshoot, the playoffs, but certainly anybody can win, as we've seen over the past several years. The Dodgers have only won one title since 1988. So that's a below average number, right? We're over 30 years
and
in.
And did it in a COVID year,
yeah,
right?
Like
I'm not holding it against them, but that's the year they won.
Yeah, right. But I still think that's a title. That counts as a full-fledged title. They had to run through the same gauntlet anyway, so or even more. And I still count that. I think it's good for the sport to have a super team. Not bad at all. One thing I will say about, you know, the way the Yankees approach this, you know, I don't blame them for getting cold feet at $300 million. That's a lot of money for a guy who's never pitched in the big leagues. You know, they had their thought in mind about Gerrit Cole makes 324. Are we really going to give somebody 325? I get that too, but the big factor is a guy who's probably going to be great, but you don't know because he's never pitched in the big league. So I get it. Mets, you know, they didn't give the $50 million signing bonus. It didn't make a difference. He wanted to be a Dodger. They got a great deal for him. I think it's great for the sport.
Yeah, look, I think the Cole thing is ultimately going to be silly, right? Because if they want to keep Soto after this season, they're going to have to pay him more than Judge. So they're going to have to, you know, at some point offend one of their great players. Gerrit Cole was one of the lead player negotiators in the CBA talks. I can't imagine he wants to see players make less. I don't think he would have had a problem with a player making more. But to your point, let's not forget it was going to be more than Cole anyway. It's $300 million. Then on $300 million, it was going to be about a $45 million posting fee. And since the Yankees are over the luxury tax, the highest number, it was going to be considerably more over the tax to pay. It was going to be a lot of money. And look, we know a lot more about the pitchers now because you could do all the analytics stuff, that you couldn't do stats cast wise as, you know, you could have in the past. I don't expect any Keigawas coming out of Japan anymore because we'll know a lot more about the pitch shapes, etc. But since you mentioned the Yankees and the Mets there, they are two teams. They built a lot of this offseason, both teams, around trying to get this player. Why don't we start with the Yankees first, John? I think of it like this. The Soto trade makes total sense to me if they got this player, because I felt they were both players away from really being special. Now I look at them and I'm like, well, you gave up a lot of pitching depth thinking you were going to get this great pitcher to be able to team with Cole, et cetera. They feel in a little problematic area. Where do you think they are?
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely discussing some of the bigger pitchers on the market. I think they like Montgomery. They always liked him, even when they traded him away. Obviously, that trade didn't exactly work out, although Bader, who has been on the show, was great in the playoffs, was not what Montgomery was. And Montgomery then went to the subsequent team, to the Rangers, and helped them win the World Series. You know, I think they'd still like to get him back and, you know, I know they're looking at some other pitching, and I still think that they're a potential World Series winner. I think they have a very good team that really underachieved last year. I mean, all those guys being hurt, Judge, Cortez, Rodon, I mean, they're not all going to be hurt, Rizzo, next year. And I think they're better. They were better than an 82-win team. They got one of the best five hitters in the game, maybe the best hitter in the game in Soto. So if they add a pitcher, I think they're going to be really good. Are they better than the Dodgers? Well, no, nobody's better than the Dodgers, but they're going to be about as good as anybody in the American League. So I think they're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I think a lot of the weight now, John, falls on to Rodon and Cortez. You can make a case. The Yankees signed Rodon to be a number two starter. Can he be a number two starter? We've seen Cortez be a number two, three type starter in the past. He wasn't last year for whatever reasons, injuries, questions about, like, did he get in good enough shape for the WBC? Did he hurt himself, etc.? But if those two guys are number two and three starters and Cole is Cole, then yeah, they're going to win 95 games probably, because you have to assume the offense is going to be much better. I assume When they were doing Soto, I kind of know this, they did a lot of legwork on Blake Snell. I wonder what they heard. I wonder if they'd go to the top of the market again for that kind of, you know, they did it with Rodon. I don't get the sense that's what they're doing. But, you know, the Yankees have surprised us before. The Mets seem to be in a completely different headspace, which was they were going after this player. And if they didn't get Yamamoto, then they were going to pivot and do more Luis Severino type things. Our colleague Mike Puma wrote about Lucas Giolito. Do you feel this is where they are? And what do you think of the plan?
Yeah, I mean, they're hard to predict because they basically touch base with everybody. I mean, the Yankees did not touch base with Eduardo Rodriguez, with some of the other top free agent pitchers. You kind of got a sense where they were going, potentially. The Mets, they've touched base with everybody. It seems like Giolito is on the radar. It seems like Imanaga is on their radar. I mean, a lot of teams are looking at Imanaga. You know, if they got those two pitchers to combine with what they have a decent rotation right now. They obviously have work to do, need to do something. I'm not sensing that they're going to get one of the big guys. I do think they are in on Montgomery to some degree, but harder to predict. I mean, Montgomery's got a pretty good market. I think between the Angels, the Giants, Red Sox, I think he's going to do okay. Texas, I think he's got a little bit of a TV issue right now, so maybe he will not go back to Texas. We shall see. That made the most sense from the start, but Montgomery's got a good market. You know, I'm not sure. It felt like the Mets were kind of all in on Yamamoto, and that was their guy. Felt like the Yankees had more definite backup plans. So, you know, I think the Mets are really shooting for 2025, and Yamamoto being a 12-year pitcher or whatever he was going to be, his 12 years with the Dodgers, made sense, you know, to get a one-year pitcher like a Burns or a two-year pitcher like Cease, you know, unless you can extend them, doesn't really make that much sense. So you've got to get somebody kind of longish term. So in that sense, maybe Montgomery or even Snell could work. They have reached out to Snell. I'm not going to predict it. Obviously, Steve Cohen has a good relationship with Scott Boras. They've done several deals together with Scherzer, Correa, which obviously didn't work out because of the physical. So I think the Mets are harder to predict, but they're going to need to do something to be competitive. You know, they said they were going to be competitive. Right now, they don't have a competitive team.
Yeah, I wonder if one of the things they should do, if they're going to do like Lucas Giolito and Mike Clevinger, just to make up two names, right? And have, you know, hey, if it all works right, it could. I think that they should probably spend some money on the bullpen. They should do someone like Hector Neris or Jordan Hicks or both of them and shorten the game a little. You know, Diaz is coming back from a significant injury. I suspect he's in his prime. He's a hard worker. Everybody around the Mets says we know he's super talented, but I think that a little safety net would go a long way. Plus shorten the game if you're going to have it, plus help because they do plan to break in some of these young starting pitchers that they've been developing. So I actually think one of the areas they should spend money is on a big reliever to, you know, kind of David Robertson on steroids a little bit. They went and got Robertson last year to be the setup guy for Diaz. He ended up being the closer. I think they need to do it again with maybe a younger, sturdier guy.
Yeah, I mean, I've recommended Hader. I don't know that that's likely in any way. I haven't heard that they've even reached out to Hader. I mean, he certainly was with Milwaukee when Stearns was there. He holds no offense about the fact that Stearns traded him in his one really criticized deal. I mean, they would have an incredible shutdown bullpen, in my opinion, the two best relievers in the game, and Diaz and Hader, if they did that. In that column, I recommended Snell, Hader, and Woodruff. You know, Woodruff is another Brewers guy, and he's not a guy who's going to pitch this year when the Mets really don't feel like they're going for the World Series. He would fit. So I could see Woodruff coming, but that doesn't help him for this year because probably won't fit this year, but that's a chance to get an ace pitcher without spending $100 million plus. So I like that move. I do like the bullpen idea. I'm not so sure I'm sold on Clevinger as a guy.
I was throwing out a name. I wouldn't bring in Clevinger
either. I would kind of
leave
Manaea. Manaea was actually very good for San Francisco at the end when they allowed him to be a starter. You know, he's shown some things in the past, was basically only average last year overall, but was good at the end. Somebody like that I could see, but Imanaga seems like definitely a target, and so does Giolito. So I think the Mets are going to do something. May not be the top thing that we recommend of Snell or that I suggested Hader, but they're going to do some things to be competitive. I do believe that they will.
Yeah, I think that they want to be at least competitive next year, have a shot at that 85 to 90 win area and get in, or have a decision in July if they want to use their bigger prospect base to get better. John, as a way to wrap up this segment, I was thinking we did a show a couple of right at the beginning of the offseason. We're talking about the teams under the most pressure. And the Giants, the Red Sox, and the Cubs were in that group. And it feels like I'm looking, and those teams have done so little. The Cubs signed the largest contract ever for a manager, and I think they're the lone team that hasn't either signed the free agent or made a trade at this point. The Giants continue to strike out on the big stuff. The Red Sox, talk about monitoring people and don't really get them. I'm just wondering, as we look at this marketplace a couple of months into it, what you think, eliminate the two New York teams, about the rest of the marketplace.
Yeah, I still got to think those are the teams that are going to go big, right? I mean, the Giants did get Lee, who's a good center fielder from Korea, got a little power, good defender. So they did do something, but not enough, probably. Certainly not enough to compete with the Dodgers at this point. So I do feel like the Giants are in on several players, both pitchers and hitters, and they will do more. I do think that the Cubs are in on several players, hitters primarily. Bellinger looks like the most obvious fit there. Maybe Chapman. The Red Sox, I've been saying they're going to do something big forever, and they've done virtually nothing. I think what it is, they have a new GM. And I mean, the market has shifted for all the GMs. I mean, I don't know that anybody expected the deals that we're seeing or the non-deals that we're seeing, and it's been slow. About half the good players are still available, and we're getting close to a new year. This is pretty unusual. And normally, the players like to be signed by Christmas. And the teams like to know where they stand by Christmas too. But I do think that the Cubs, the Giants, and the Red Sox do have moves in store, and they will make moves eventually. Certainly, Montgomery and Snell are candidates, I would say, for the Giants. I would say at least Montgomery for the Red Sox. The Cubs, again, looking at offense, and I think they'll come up with somebody, whether it be Chapman or Bellinger, whomever. They need offense, and I think they will get it. But overall, it's been a very slow-moving market, but shockingly slow for some of these big market teams.
They were waiting for me to come back from vacation, John. They're all going to speed up now. When John and I come back, we're almost at the end of 2023. We're going to do some year-end awards. That's if you stick with us on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman. John, when we're our age, the years go a little too fast now, and we're ending another one, 2023. Why don't we look back on the baseball year? You and I, we were texting with one another yesterday. Let's at least start with the standard stuff, which is, who do you think the pitcher and hitter of the year were? It felt a little like the awards themselves. It feels like it should be Ohtani and Cole. Is it Ohtani and Cole for you?
Well, I think it's definitely Ohtani. I mean, nobody does what he does. I mean, his WAR is around 10 in his MVP years. And so I think Ohtani is definitely the player of the year. And that's in a year where Acuña had 40 home runs and 70 steals and was incredible. Betts was amazing. Olson, Freeman, a lot of great performances this year. But to me, it's got to be Ohtani as the player of the year and probably the story of the year. And as far as the pitcher of the year, I think it's a coin flip. I mean, I'll go with Cole. We're local, but Snell has a case. He had a 1-2 ERA from late May on. He was dominant like nobody's business. Nobody was even close to him. The next best ERA was twice what his ERA was from late May on. So I think Snell has a case, but from beginning to end of the year, I think that Gerrit Cole probably is the pitcher of the year.
When you dig into Snell, I'm not a big Snell fan. I mean, look, I'm a big Snell fan. He's obviously a talented guy. But when you dig into him, it's impressive. Like, stuff I care about. Like, if you look, I think there were seven teams that averaged over 5 runs a game. And I went and looked at what his stuff was. He had like the lowest ERA against those teams. Like, it wasn't like, oh, he beat up on the Rockies or like bad teams. And,
He
he
beats the
pitches in
Dodgers.
a pitcher's park. His stuff was better on the road. So, like, there was stuff to suggest excellence. The number that stands out to me that separates Cole from Snell is 29 extra innings. I mean, do we get a different Cole if we tell him you could pitch a lot less? The walks, the high pitch counts do keep, 29 innings for Blake Snell is about five starts. Like, he's a 6-inning pitcher.
Right.
So,
Snell's a sixth inning pitcher, and Cole's one of those rare guys who's a seven plus inning pitcher. I mean, Wheeler, Nola, there's a very short list. So not to denigrate Snell, but he is a sixth inning pitcher, not the pitcher that Cole is in terms of the longevity during the games and really the consistency over his career. Although Snell's won two Cy Youngs and to me, amazingly, led the league in walks this year and led the league in ERA. Not something you're ever going to see again. I mean, he is not really hittable. If you look at his stats, they kind of line up with Randy Johnson through his age 30 season. They're very, very similar in terms of batting average against and whip and all of that. So, I mean, this is a great pitcher. Is he Gerrit Cole? No, Gerrit Cole's the best pitcher in baseball, but he's right up there, I think.
Yeah, the question is, does he become Randy Johnson and kind of get the ball over the plate a little more as he gets older? Or are the walks, which he gets around now because his stuff is so great,
Nobody hits him.
and that
Yeah.
nobody hits him? I mean, I think he
Right.
could yell curveball and it wouldn't matter and nobody's going to hit it. But if the
Right.
stuff comes down a little and he's still walking those guys, that's my concern if you start signing
Okay.
the guy to a 6, 7, 8 year contract. John, let's go on to like things that the baseball writers don't vote on for a couple of things. As usual, you and I did not discuss our answers to this, so I'm always wondering how many
They'll
times
all be the same, right? They're always
we'll
going
do
to
this. So,
be.
biggest hero of the season. Who's your biggest hero of the season?
I'm going to go with Mike Hazen. I covered a lot of the Diamondbacks in the all the series. I mean, he did a terrific job with his team. Nobody thought they would contend. They made it all the way to the World Series. I don't know if he's the baseball president or general manager, but he's generally the general manager of the team. He got his four sons, young sons. One of them, I think, is about to go to college, but they're all young. They were all young when his wife came down with the glioblastoma, deadly brain co tumor that just cannot be overcome. And unfortunately, she passed away sometime within the last year. And, he just kept on keeping on and really got through it somehow. I don't know how, but amazing. I mean, she's in her 40s, very beautiful woman, very big Diamondback fan. Everybody loved her. And it's just heartbreaking to see from a distance. So to be up close, amazing that he got through it and led his team to the World Series. So Mike Hazen's my pick.
Yeah, you're better. Hazen, the VP and GM of the Diamondbacks. That's going to be a better pick than mine. Look, we'll beat up on my answer on other shows because there's certainly things to beat up on Rob Manfred. But the institution of the pitch clock this year, there's probably a lot of fathers of it, but ultimately the guy who had to get it pushed through was the commissioner of baseball. Selfishly, I think we like it. The quicker games have great value, but I also think it was better for the fans. 9-inning games, 240, down 24 minutes from the previous year. But I think the most important thing, John, is our sport, as opposed to the other ones, are just we treat the rules like a Bible instead of something that men have created and people have created, and we have to be open to change. For example, I do think this idea of the spring breakout this year, where all the best prospects play against each other in games. I think that's a great idea. We need more innovation. We need to remember this needs to be fun. I looked at this, right? There were over three for 3.5 hour games. There were just nine last year. There were over 300 2 years ago. There were nine. That's not fun for anyone. No one wants to go to a movie that's 3.5 hours, see a play that's 3.5 hours. So for me, the hero is the pitch clock, and the father of the pitch clock historically will probably be Rob Manfred. John, biggest villain. I have a feeling we'll probably be same on this one.
Yeah, no, I will agree with you on Rob Manfred. I think that was a good pick. I wouldn't denigrate that pick. It certainly was a big boost, not to just us deadline writers, but to everybody. It
It
certainly
was better
improved
for
the
the
game.
game.
2.5 hours, right? My villain is John Fisher, the owner of the Oakland A's. I mean, the guy's going to benefit. He's now going to have a franchise that's going to be valued, doubled probably. It's going to have a value of $2 billion, $3 billion, who knows, in Las Vegas, a hot place, which is the right place to move. I mean, I get it. I understand why baseball is letting him move. I am a little disappointed that he gets to be the one to benefit from this because he ran that team into the ground. I understand there were problems with the stadium and everything else, but, he didn't do anything to help the situation, and he's going to be the biggest benefactor of the move.
Yeah, John, we're in agreement on this. The other owners, and you understand because they want to be able to move their franchises, but the vote was 29 to nothing. Nobody stood up for a guy who raised ticket prices, created a double A team on the field and didn't improve a stadium that's a dump, then complained that nobody was coming to the games. You know, this is a guy who inherited his money. He's worth $2.6 billion. His parents, you know, started the Gap. You know, this, it feels unfortunate. He's put on a bad product. He's taking his, and by the way, the truth just would have set you free. Just say you want to move the team. Oakland isn't viable, but to put Oakland through the grinder when it was so clear this became pantomime after a while that he was moving the team, and no matter what, Howard Terminal or wherever else they created, he was going to move the team to Vegas, and he did. So we agree, biggest villain. John, biggest breakout of 2023. Who do you got?
You know, I'll go with Bobby Witt Jr. I mean, he was a number two overall pick, so we knew he was going to be a star, but he became a superstar this year. He was really good already, but he's one of the five fastest guys in the game. He's got incredible power. I saw him over here play perfect game not far from me in Jupiter and hit the ball about 450 feet. I saw him win a home run contest when he was a high school player. I hit the ball like nobody's business in a home run hitting contest. I mean, that was with an aluminum bat, but I think the ball was going like 500 feet. Incredible talent. I mean, we both know his dad, who's an agent with Octagon. Very nice fellow, Bobby Witt Sr. Yeah. We covered as a pitcher with the Rangers, but his son is way ahead of him and a superstar at this point.
Yeah, you know, for my breakout, can I do an umbrella? I think I'm going to go with the Orioles. They're a little bit like Bobby Witt. They had shown us something the year before, and then they kind of won 101 games in the AL East. And I think it was because, yes, they had excellent players, but there were breakouts. Did you see Kyle Bradish coming? You know, he had a 4.90 ERA in 2022. He was one of the 10 best starting pitchers in the American League last year. Batista and Cano, unfortunately, Batista needed Tommy John surgery. They became, they may arguably, the two best relief pitchers in baseball for, you know, until Batista got hurt. Gunnar Henderson was a big prospect, but he started slow. But he was one of the best players in baseball for the last 2-3 months of the year. So it all looks, though, of course, they'll be operating without Batista, and they didn't go out and get, at least to this point, a big starting pitcher, which we all thought they might. But they look like they're going to be here for a while because we had his dad on the show. We had Matt Holliday. Jackson Holliday is going to join this cast next year. So to me, they're the breakout. John, how about the opposite of breakout? Disappointment. I wonder if we're going to be similar here. What's the biggest disappointment?
I doubt it. There are a lot of disappointments, yeah. Right? I'm going to say Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He had an OPS under 800. That's not him. He should be much better than that. I'm not sure what happened. That team underachieved again. Obviously, they tried for Ohtani. That was a good try. They didn't get him. But Vladimir Guerrero Jr. did not look like a superstar this year. I think he didn't hit a home run at home for the first, I don't know, more than half of the season. You know, I'm shocked at the season he had, but there were a lot of disappointments. So I'm going to bet you come up with somebody different.
Yeah, I came up with three. The Yankees, the Mets, and the Padres. At about this time last year, and certainly by spring training, we thought these were super teams, a little bit how we think of the Dodgers now. Right. Not one of them made the playoffs. The Mets were sellers by July. The Yankees did nothing in July because they didn't really believe in the product enough to add to it. They were right about that. It wasn't a very good team. And, you know, for all the Padres, terrible, Peter Seidler, their terrific owner, passed away, but they've decided to pivot, right? And they traded Soto. They're kind of breaking down now a little bit. Obviously, they're going to still try to win and do stuff, but, you know, they've had to break up the gang a little bit. It's a reminder that the champions of the offseason always aren't always the champions of the regular season. Footnote the Dodgers. Let's remember that in about 8 to 10 months. But they're my disappointment. John, transaction of the year. What do you think was the best move?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Texas Rangers and Jordan Montgomery trade. You know, he beat Houston twice in the ALCS, helped them beat that rival, get to the World Series. Win the World Series for the first time. And, you know, Texas made a lot of good moves. I know San Diego and Mets free agents endeavors didn't exactly work out, but Texas is did. Philadelphia's did. So I don't want to say that it's that free agency is not worth it. I think it is. Texas had signed a year before they were ready and they knew they weren't going to be a contender. They signed Seager and they signed Semien. And that set them up. And, I mean, I'm looking at the Mets right now, and I think they know they're not going to win the World Series, or probably not going to win the World Series this year. But it doesn't hurt if you sign a guy long term and he's around. I wouldn't say the first year is completely wasted having a great player. And, I think Texas overall did a fantastic job. And I would say that the top move was Jordan Montgomery at the trade deadline.
Yeah, we're in agreement there. He pitched for them 17 times, 16 starts between the regular season and the postseason. Remember, they just got in to the playoffs, right? Like them in Seattle they're battling to the end. They needed Jordan Montgomery with everything they did with DeGrom and Scherzer, Simeon and Seager, et cetera, over the past couple of years. Without Montgomery, they don't even get in, much less win the World Series. And those 17 appearances, 2.83 ERA. He has certainly set himself up for a big Bay Day, and he was both of our transaction of the year. Let's go the
I'm
other
glad you
two.
mentioned that. I just want to point out that Texas and Arizona had a fight that last few days to get in the playoffs and both made the World Series. So that extra one or two games makes a difference.
Yeah, no doubt. And Jordan Montgomery made a difference. Let's go the other way there. Worst transaction of the year. I wonder if we're the same here also.
Yeah, we might be. I mean, you kind of called this
Yeah, we're the
half
same.
ago at the winter meetings. Carlos Rodon for $162 million. You were on it. I didn't really have a thought. I did think it was a lot of money. But the guy was one of the best pitchers in baseball the year before in San Francisco, and goes to the Yankees, which nobody expected him to have the year that he had. He certainly had a lot of injuries. I can't even remember them all. I think some involved the arm, but the back. But when he did pitch, he was frankly terrible. So $162 million for terrible gets you the worst transaction of the year. I didn't even have a second place, really.
Yeah, 14 games, 6.85 ERA. He was literally one of the worst starters in the history of a storied franchise. And by the way, blew a kiss to the fans coming off the field,
That didn't
disrespected
bother
his
me.
pitching,
Yeah,
disrespected his pitching coach when he came out to get him late in the year.
that wasn't
It's
good.
these are bad looks when you have almost a 7 ERA. And it was just a stupid theory. The Yankees' theory was they needed him to beat the Astros. I guess they didn't notice that they hardly scored against the Astros, and their offense had been really, really bad from midseason on. It was Aaron Judge and nothing. And then their offense went to complete garbage, but they did have Carlos Rodon helping everybody else's offense.
Yeah, it
John,
turns
let's.
out Montgomery was the guy to beat the Astros. They already had him.
Yes,
But
yes. They ended up 82 and 80 for a lot of reasons, John. There were a lot of bad moves over the last 36 months in particular. Why don't we wrap up 2023 and this show by story of the year? What do you
I signaled it earlier. I think it's Ohtani again winning the MVP
think?
unanimously. I mean, the guy was one of the best five pitchers in the league, was the best hitter in the American League. Judge was hurt, so I do think Judge is the best hitter, but Ohtani was the best hitter, and then he signs for $700 million. Some economists are figuring it at 400 something million, but in any case, it's a record. And he's made the Dodgers into a super team. I mean, Yamamoto, that's great, but that feels like a little extra gravy. Ohtani is the guy.
Yeah, John, we are in agreement here. I think it was the year of Ohtani because when we look back, we'll remember the pitch clock, which I think is going to be a huge point in the history of the game. We'll remember those teams we thought were super teams that failed. But at the end, Ohtani did something that nobody else has ever done. He just won the MVP unanimously for a second time. He continued to pitch and hit at the highest level in the sport in a way that no one ever had. And however you break up the 700 million, however he's going to be paid over how many years, it's 700 million. It makes you go, wow, the first time you see it before you start parsing what it means. I think when we look back at 2023 with all the other Rangers first championship ever, all this other stuff, this will be the year of Ohtani.
Agreed.
John, it was hopefully also the year of the show. I really love doing this podcast with you. Happy, healthy New Year to you, Kareem, Maya. All the best to our producers who get us through the show every week and help us so much, Andrew Hartz and Jake Brown. Thank you. Happy, healthy New Year's to you guys. To the listeners, thank you so much for listening each week to our podcast, the show. To Yes, the show drops on their app tomorrow, Friday, about noon. Please, those fans, you help keep us on the air. Go to Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen. Give us a 5-star review. It does help us. And John, I'll see you in 2024 if you stick with us on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman.